Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
On this Tuesday, what is it?
September 20th.
September 20th, 2016. Welcome to our program. You want to give us a little preview of what we got coming up today?
Absolutely. Love to do it. In just a few minutes, we're going to have Jeremy Dyes, who's senior counsel with First Liberty Institute. They recently won a victory in California. The school told a 7-year-old student he could not pass out Bible verses to his classmates and called the cops on this kid. We got some good news to start off the show in a little bit. Bottom of the hour, Ken Paxton, Attorney General of Texas, will be talking about Target and what's happened recently in the Dallas-Fort Worth area regarding one of the Target changing areas. Bottom of the hour, Michael Savage, host of the nationally syndicated The Savage Nation. He's written a book titled Scorched Earth, Restoring the Country After Obama. And then next hour, inspirational guest Jen Bricker, who's written the book Everything is Possible, Finding the Faith and Courage to Follow Your Dreams. Jen was born without legs, but is an athlete and motivational speaker and an author. We're going to be talking to her about having the faith and courage to follow your dreams. So a lot of great guests today.
Well, the New York terror attacks, New York, New Jersey, Minnesota, I guess I should say.
Yes.
Over the weekend, been in the news, and this fella, they arrested, well, they got in a shootout with him. In New York, the one who...
Yes, the Afghan immigrant.
Yeah, how long had he been in, since he was 7 years old, right?
Yeah, I think he was 15 years. He'd been
28 years old.
Okay, so he was a naturalized citizen, which means he immigrated to the country but became a citizen. He got in a shootout, but he lives, so apparently he's now in federal custody, and I'm sure they're going to be questioning him. So I'm guessing that pretty soon the Obama administration will not have to guess as to what his motivation was. I'm sure he's only too happy to tell them.
The motivation?
Yeah. Well, you know, the Obama administration had not said anything as to why they thought these attacks had happened. You know, and
have they still not?
As far as I know, there has been nothing said. President Obama himself didn't say anything for a day or two.
Well,
and just even mentioning the attacks, in any kind of public way.
There's a commonality here between these terrorists that these jihadis that. A lot of them, have you noticed that when they're, after it's found out that they are the perpetrators, their friends and family will say, we had no idea.
Right.
That this person had this ideology or this inclination, or they were the nicest person.
Right. They're so quiet.
Never saw it coming.
Kept to themselves.
Whatever. They often say, though, that I have noticed that he got more religious.
That's true. This is different, and this is an interesting point you're bringing up. A lot of times, a serial killer or someone who just goes on a killing spree, you hear the first part of what you just said. Oh, he was my next door neighbor, was a nice guy. We'd talk some over the hedge. He was quiet. We didn't see it coming. But when you have these terrorist attacks, you hear the first part, and then the second part. You say, yeah, he did become more religious.
Mm-hmm. He grew a beard.
Yes.
He began to go to mosque more. My question would be, that seems to be a reoccurring theme. You never hear of, well, he was just a nominal Muslim, but he decided to blow people up.
Right.
You hear, they always say, well, he was a devout. He was getting more religious. He grew a beard. He traveled to Mecca or Afghanistan or somewhere
in Syria
got,
or
got,
you know,
quote radicalized. And this is happening. I mean, this happens. This is the repeated story.
Yeah, and a lot of times, even if you don't hear that from neighbors, you do. You know, the authorities do go to the Facebook page,
right,
or they, you
right.
know, they get some kind of manifesto, right. and it's steeped in.
Are you amazed at how fast they caught this guy, though?
I was
in a city like New York and New Jersey with millions of people, and they were able to find out who it was so quick because of these a lot of these cameras they got everywhere.
Well, I know authorities said in answer to that or in response to that kind of statement, they said yes, there was a lot of technology involved that helped us, and they also said but a lot of good old fashioned police work. So, you know, you got to say hats off to the law enforcement authorities who seem to use quickly, probably whatever cameras, you know, whatever kinds of video they had access to, they were able to. Maybe they saw a license plate on this, and were able to track this guy down, Rahami. But that was the response of the law enforcement. They said, "Yes, we use technology, but yes, a lot of good old fashioned police work." So,
mm-hmm. Well, it's really a blessing that nobody was killed, because
yes.
it could have killed a lot of people.
Right.
Had that bomb going off where they were running the 5K or whatever they were running.
The Marine.
Yeah. Yeah. It was timed. The
benefit for
it was,
Marines.
It was supposed to go off. The bomb was timed to go off right when the people would be running by that
right.
area.
Like the Boston Marathon.
Of the race. Yeah. And it didn't. And the one in New York did injure a lot of people. 20-something people. But I think this is just, how do I say this? You're just going to have to get used to this. We are just, and maybe we are getting used to this because it's just the world we live in. And, you know, the fact is that you can call them being radicalized
right.
or radical Islam or whatever. The fact is there's a certain percentage of particularly young men. We mentioned the demographic yesterday, between the ages of 18 and 35, Muslim men who think if they can kill non-Muslims, they go straight to paradise.
Right.
And if they believe that, that is a great motivator for making bombs or slicing people up or anything they can do to advance the cause of jihad. They think, in their eyes, they're pleasing Allah, their God, and so it gives them assurance that they will go to paradise. So
well, it's like you said yesterday, it's not a natural thing because of our feelings for self-preservation. It's not a natural thing to blow yourself up. It's not a natural thing to put yourself in harm's way, because you know you could approach someone with a knife or a gun. You could be shot. You could be killed by police. That's not a normal thing for people to do. So you have to in some way get them to understand that by putting themselves in harm's way or by doing X, Y, and Z, there will be a great benefit for you. And that's obviously what you mentioned even yesterday, talking about the promise that whereas most Muslims, according to their religion, aren't sure whether they'll go to paradise. They're just not sure. There's no confidence that they're in right standing with Allah. The only ones who can be assured that they're in right standing and will go to paradise are those who die as martyrs for the faith.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a strong motivating factor. It obviously has to be, because these people oftentimes die in the commission of these acts of terror.
You know, this is why it's not unreasonable to ask ourselves, how many Muslims do we want to let immigrate into America or from Muslim countries? That sounds like you're religiously profiling. Yes, that's exactly what you're doing.
Right.
Because of the reality of what we said in the last few minutes. It's a religious doctrine inside Islam that a significant percentage of Muslim followers subscribe to.
And you can't tell by looking at them outwardly. I mean, these guys aren't wearing a sign that say, I'm a jihadist.
No.
I'm of that percentage that believes that Islam teaches me to kill the infidel, that I am at war with the, that Islam is at war with the West.
If you, as President Obama does, deny that jihad exists, I mean, he will just tell you, he was asked on a trip to India one time, 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, what about jihad? And he just did contortions to not admit that there is a teaching of jihad inside Islam that advocates the killing of innocents.
Right.
We would call innocents. They would call us infidels.
Right.
So if you don't believe that they're motivated by their religious teaching, that President Obama doesn't, he'll never admit to it.
Right.
Then you would be fine with letting, then you see no difference between letting Muslims in or Christians
right
into the country. But it was interesting yesterday, then we'll move on to our guests. You and I told you to come over to my office and look at a comment on the New York Times website after the story about they captured this guy in a gunfight. What is his name again?
Ahmad Rahami.
Yeah, 28 years old. And there was a person on there who was a liberal, and they were saying that they were exhausted in having to, every time this happens, tell people that Islam is a religion of peace.
Right.
Because it just rings hollow.
Yeah.
When this happens over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, and they said, I'm exhausted trying to, and arguing with my Midwestern family that this has nothing to do with Islam. And this was a person who's just saying, look, you know, his eyes were seeing, his mind was comprehending what is the truth. And that is, as you pointed out, Tim, there is a significant and dangerous percentage of Muslims in this world and in this country who believe that jihad is not simply an individual struggle against sin. It is a clash of civilizations in which, as you pointed out, there are no innocents. This is what this is what the teaching of the Muslim Brotherhood and others is. There is no such thing as innocent men, women, and children. They are infidels. They all should be killed. So,
well, and we'll see what happens with this situation. I guess the guy will be charged and he'll go to court and have a trial and all that. As a U.S. citizen. But anyway, kudos to the New York police and the New Jersey police and the FBI. I mean, I was amazed how fast they were able to identify who this was and then find him. You know, like I said, you're talking about a city of millions of people.
Right.
New York and the New Jersey areas, highly densely populated. So anyway, good job by them. And but, wow, you know, Donald Trump just got slammed for saying he wanted to stop Muslims from coming to America.
At least until we know what's going on.
Yeah. And I think I don't know how you do that exactly, but you're being willfully blind if you don't acknowledge that there is a problem within Islam that makes it different than a Swede immigrating here or someone from Brazil.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So we will see what happens with this. Hillary Clinton is blaming Donald Trump for his rhetoric causing terrorism. Oh, did you see that?
No, did not.
She said it causes his rhetoric basically causes terrorism. I saw that, causes more terrorism anyway. Like we haven't been having this for hundreds of years.
1,400 years. 1,400 years, right. Apparently, our rhetoric has been causing this.
Right, right. All right, you're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Who's up next?
Well, we want to welcome to the program Jeremy Dice, who's senior counsel with First Liberty Institute. Jeremy, thank you for being on our program.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So we kind of teased this at the top of the hour. It's kind of hard to believe that you guys had to go to bat for a family in which a 7-year-old student had the cops called on him for passing out Bible verses to classmates. Why don't you tell our listeners what happened in California?
These are remarkable cases that we see all too often throughout the country, whether it's ours or another organization having to just really go back to the issue of, you know, common sense to figure these things out. But you know, this young man was going to school as an elementary student. His mom, like I think a lot of moms probably do, packed his lunch and put in there some Bible verses and some stories from the Bible, and he decided that he would share those with his friends at school when he did. Evidently, the school didn't like that, because one day the parents opened up the door, and standing in front of them was a sheriff's deputy. And the sheriff's deputy was there to tell them that their little boy had been passing out those Bible verses and Bible stories to his classmates. And as a result of all that, the school is saying that he can't do that anymore. Now, I mean, think of what the lesson here that has been taught to this young man, that that if you dare talk about your faith, or if you share your faith with a classmate, an armed law enforcement officer will come to your door and tell you not to do that. That's not the America that I remember being a part of, and it shouldn't be the America that anybody wants to be a part of, where a school will send an armed law enforcement officer to your home because you dared talk about your faith in public.
Well, and Jeremy, one of the things, I'm looking at a ChristianDaily.com story on this. One of the things is just heartbreaking. The story says when, I guess, this little girl got to read the Bible story that the mom had sent to school with this little boy in his lunch, and the little girl said, "Teacher, this is the most beautiful story I've ever seen." I mean, this was, you know, we as Christians, we sit there and we go, "Wow, that's the power of the Word of God." And this little girl was just saying, "I've never heard anything like this." And the answer of the school was separation of church and state. For most Americans, I would hope even fair-minded atheists, they would listen to that and just shake their head.
Yeah, look, I understand first-grade boys can sometimes get themselves into trouble. They wiggle a lot. Look, I've got 4 boys myself, ranging from 11 down to 3.5. So I know all about little boys and how they wiggle a lot in class, and they may even go on the playground and pull the hair of the pretty girls on the playground or whatever it might be. But look, it is a whole nother thing here for a school district to send a deputy sheriff to the home of his parents when he dares to talk about his faith at school. Look, I want all the kids that are listening, and especially all the parents that are listening to your show right now that are hearing this, and are frankly shocked that someone from the police department would show up at your doorstep because of a Bible story that your kid handed to another student. Listen very carefully. Your students have the right to share their faith at school, period. The school here was wrong. Caleb Zavala, he was right. He should have done what he was doing, and the school district was very wrong to send those things in there. And if you are one of those moms who are packing your lunches today or this morning packed your lunch with these Bible verses in them, keep doing it. And remind your kids that they're encouraged to be able to send those and provide those to their classmates here. There's an old case here that goes back to 1969, and in 1969, the Supreme Court of the United States said that it is the unmistakable holding of this court, the Supreme Court, and they said for 50 years, so that was 1969. So, and this has not changed since 1969. We're approaching a century in which it has been the unmistakable holding of the Supreme Court of the United States. What is it? That students do not shed their First Amendment rights when they walk through the schoolhouse gates. That means they can talk about their faith in the hallways. They can talk about their faith in the classroom during class discussions. They can reference their faith in class assignments. And they certainly, over lunchtime, can hand out little Bible stories to their classmates. And they should never expect a school to send an armed officer to their home to punish them for exercising their First Amendment freedoms. That is shameful, and it is completely against what we stand for as a country, this little old notion that you and I used to call freedom.
So what happened in this case? First, Liberty Institute got involved. What was the outcome?
Well, I believe the Zabellas have been able to been more or less vindicated here. I think the school has now responded and apologized for that. But look, even the fact that this happened in the first place is absolutely ridiculous. And frankly, all those organizations that have for the last 50 years pounded this drum of so-called separation of church and state, I lay the foot of blame directly at their feet here. That they've created such hysteria about this idea that any reference of faith in public, we've got to have a complete put-down of that by school officials. They've created the situation now in which school districts are no longer content to simply send little Jimmy to detention. Now they're sending police officers to their home, for goodness sakes. This is wrong. And it certainly is not the freedom that our founding fathers instituted long ago for us to be able to believe. And it's certainly not what the Supreme Court said back in 1969. Those students, including Caleb Zavella, he does not shed his religious liberty, his First Amendment freedoms when he walks through the schoolhouse gates.
Jeremy Dice, attorney for the First Liberty Institute out of Dallas, is with us. They do constitutional law, religious freedom cases, pro bono, and they we're talking about a particular case. You know, Jeremy, this Tim, I think in most cases where this kind of thing happens, it's the paranoia of the attorney for the school system, oftentimes, and it's the or the administration. They think they can't do things that they can because they've read about it in the news or they've had an ACLU lawyer come in and lecture them at one of their teacher conferences, these kinds of things. And so I'm glad to know that groups like yours are telling people what their rights are, and then you guys are willing to go to court if you have a legitimate case to defend people without, you know, having them break their personal bank account.
Right.
What would you recommend people do? If people do want to know more about your organization, how can they find out more?
Well, go to firstliberty.org, and especially parents and students, would you go to firstliberty.org and download our Religious Liberty Toolkit for students and teachers? Put it in your notebook, put it up on your refrigerator, look down through the list of all the freedoms that you have when you go to school to be able to talk about your religion and your religious liberty that you carry into the school district too. Don't forget about those. And then when you realize something's gone wrong, hey, give us a call. We represent people for free. We don't charge you for representing you because we believe if your civil rights have been violated, you shouldn't have to pay an attorney to get those vindicated again. In addition to your listening to AFR, I'd really encourage you to go to firstliberty.org/briefing and start listening to the story of religious liberty. These are just 90 seconds stories of what's going on in religious liberty. You know, it's stories about Caleb Zavella, in addition to stories like Gabriela Perez, who was 5 years old and tried to say grace over her lunch and was told that she couldn't and ultimately had to go to the principal's office and pick out the teacher from a photo lineup. I mean, these are the stories that are going on throughout the country. But guess what? Many of them have a happy ending. And there's a lot more religious liberty in this country than we sometimes think by watching the news today. So go to firstliberty.org, learn about your religious liberty, and then be prepared to defend it.
Thanks, Jeremy. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, some good news. Yeah. And as Jeremy said, a lot of these cases have a good ending. Christians need to stand up for their rights. And they need to go to groups like First Liberty Institute when their rights are infringed upon. Otherwise, we risk losing those freedoms.
Hey, we're going to talk to Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton when we get back. He sent a letter to the Target Corporation a few months ago about their bathroom and changing room policy, allowing men into women's restrooms and men into women's changing areas at their stores. And Attorney General Paxton sent Target a letter, and we'll let him tell you what it said. We'll be back momentarily.
On the next Today's Issues, we'll be joined in the studio by Wesley Wildman to discuss the 2017 Engage Conference.
That's a conference that's going to be here locally for the millennials, and it's called Created to Reflect.
We'll also talk with Timothy Parker, author of the official Bible Brilliant trivia book. And Dr. Alex McFarland will join us to discuss news headlines of the day. That's on the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on AFR, and online at AFR.net.
Since I've led tours for many years to the Holy Land, Israel, many people ask me, what's your favorite place to go? I have two, really. The Garden Tomb and Calvary and the Sea of Galilee. Now, I like all the places we stopped along the way in Israel, but those two places in particular are very special and meaningful. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We'll be going to all the places you've read about in the Bible since you were a child. It's going to be a very special tour of Israel, the Holy Land, March 9 through 17, 2017. We're taking a direct flight from New York to Tel Aviv. For all the information on this tour, just call us at 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and leave us your name and your address, and we'll send you a brochure. 800-FAMILIES, option 5, or visit the website twholyland.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. Who does Hillary Clinton find more deplorable, the Islamic radicals or Donald Trump supporters? I read a transcript of her remarks yesterday in the aftermath of the terror attacks, and to be honest, it's hard to tell. She condemned the ideology of the Muslim bad guy, but not the Muslim bad guy. As a matter of fact, she went out of her way to assure us that millions of Muslims are peaceful and law-abiding, a gentle reminder not to make generalizations. Although, just last week, she made some pretty gross generalizations about Donald Trump and his supporters, called us a basket of deplorables, a bunch of racist, Islamophobic homophobes, irredeemable, not American. She even accused Mr. Trump of treason, aiding and abetting the jihadist, but nary a disparaging word about the real jihadist. So who does Hillary Clinton find more revolting? Islamic radicals or American deplorables? I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We're going to be joined momentarily by Attorney General of Texas Ken Paxton, talking about a letter that his office sent to the Target Corporation after the Target Corporation announced in April that they thought it'd be a great idea to invite men into women's restrooms and changing areas. And they wanted to show that they were diverse and inclusive, and so that was the direction they were taking, and they wanted the world to know about it.
Right.
And so since that time, Target has lost at least 1.4 million customers, or you could argue 1.4 million families. They've lost more than that in terms of people who won't go back into their stores until this policy's changed, but... That's the number of people, Ed, that have signed our Boycott Target pledge form on the internet at afa.net.
That's correct, and it happened quickly. The first million we got in 1 week's time. You know, this is one of those issues where, you know, you just have to recognize that nature is nature, and there's no getting around it. And you know, the fact is that most Americans, I have to believe, that's because, you know, we've had this great response to the boycott petition. Most Americans are just, first of all, uncomfortable with being in the restroom with a stranger of the opposite sex. And most women and children do not want to be in an enclosed environment with a strange man they don't know when they're doing something so personal. And I think that Target has blown it. I think a lot of corporations are watching this boycott because they don't want to get caught in the same sandstorm because most people see this as ridiculous.
Yeah, and the boycott has impacted their bottom line.
Yes, it has. You know, we had the release of their second quarter earnings report, and they are feeling the pinch. But, of course, their argument is it has nothing to do with the fact that 1.4 million families are boycotting their store. But they've admitted that foot traffic is down at all their stores. Their income is down. Their earnings are down from the same period last year. The boycott is having an effect. But you know what, Tim? Even if we didn't have those numbers going in our favor in terms of the financial impact, this is still the right thing to do, because what Target is doing is wrong. This yeah. policy is dangerous. It is misguided. And we've made it clear that we think this policy, we understand they're trying to help transgendered customers or employees, but that can be solved with a single occupancy, gender neutral bathroom, which we suggested at the beginning of our boycott.
They are building those in Target stores.
They are.
But what's the, so what's the
well,
problem?
Well, the fact is, we want the men's room and the men's changing area, the women's room and the women's changing area, to remain gender specific. So men go to the men's room and the changing right. area, women go to theirs, and you don't let men in the women's room.
Okay. So Target is telling everybody that they're building the family restrooms or the gender neutral restrooms in all their stores. They're spending a lot of money.
$20 million.
A lot of money to do that. I think what Target is missing here is that's fine if they tell the transgendered people to go use that restroom. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
If they maintain their policy of letting men into women's restrooms and changing areas, nothing changes.
Yeah, you know, this...
What's the problem with it? I don't understand... Why wouldn't, I'm asking a rhetorical question in a sense, I know the answer to my own question, but I'll ask it anyway. Why wouldn't Target just say, listen, everybody can be happy now. We got a men's restroom and changing area. We got a women's restroom and changing area. And if you are transgendered, you can use the single occupancy restroom and have it all to yourself. And everybody's happy. Why can't, do you think they will make that kind of announcement?
I don't think they will
because
what the transgendered people are saying is a man who believes he's a woman, he's saying, I am a woman, and you shouldn't make me use a separate restroom.
Okay. So
we can continue
explaining. Yeah, but we have Attorney General
Ken Paxton
on from Texas right now. And he joins us. This is Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano on American Family Radio. Attorney General Paxton, thanks for joining us.
Hey, I really appreciate you having me on.
Thank you. Hey, we were talking about the Target situation. What's the letter that you sent to Target about?
So initially we sent a letter way back in the spring asking them to consider putting together safety policies as it relates to their new policy on bathrooms. We never heard from them, so... In North Texas, we had two incidences of men in women's changing areas, and so we again sent them another letter telling them basically that we would be happy to help them with their safety policies.
Those incidents you mentioned happened at Target stores in North Texas?
Yes, one in Frisco and one in Dallas.
And so they haven't responded at all? Are you surprised?
You know, I was hopeful that we could work with them and try to help them with
right.
their policies. I mean, if they want to go down this path, we feel like they need to take into account the safety of women and children.
What if, I'm doing a hypothetical here, and I don't know how much you want to deal in hypotheticals, but what if, for example, you have a situation where a customer is in Target and they're in the changing area, let's say, for example, and they find out that... As in a couple of cases, well, this is happening around the country, not just in Texas, where a man is taking their picture unbeknownst to them, or they see that they're taking their picture in the changing area, violating their privacy, and there's nobody to stop that man from going into the women's changing area or restroom in the first place. No Target employee, for example, policing the area, so to speak. which would be a first safety net. It's just wide open. Could a individual who's violated in that way file a court case against Target for not protecting them?
I think absolutely so. I would definitely first, I'd call the police.
Right.
I'd potentially file a criminal complaint. And
right.
And I think you may have some kind of civil action against Target for not putting in place the appropriate
right.
safety measures.
Which is your question to
exactly,
them.
Exactly, which is what I'm trying to stop before it
right.
happens.
Right, exactly. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Our guest is Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, whose office sent a letter to the Target Corporation asking them what are their policies that are in place to protect the women and children in particular now who are more vulnerable because Target has announced to the world, we welcome men into women's restrooms in changing areas. That's our policy. Ed?
Yeah, Attorney General Paxton, you know, our position, you know, we called for this boycott against Target in April when they publicized their policy. Our position all along has been we do not consider transgendered individuals to be a threat to women and children. However, the policy that's been instituted is one that removes an initial obstacle for those who want to victimize women and children. I think that's probably your you know concern as well. This is an opinion question, but I am asking you. We don't think it's unreasonable to say that if store employees, store officials don't have an initial obstacle, then people who want to victimize women and children who are suddenly in a enclosed environment with a predator or a voyeur, if you don't have that initial obstacle where a store official can say, sir, that's the women's room, you can't go in there, you are opening the door to predators and voyeurs. I don't think that's unreasonable, do you?
No, I think that's exactly what we're all concerned about. It's not the few individuals that supposedly this was targeted at. It's actually opening the door for, you know, all kinds of bad people to do bad things. And I think that's what any common sense person is concerned about.
Ken Paxton with us, Texas Attorney General. Attorney General Paxton, thanks for being on American Family Radio. We appreciate your concern for women and children in particular in your state as it relates to the Target policy now. And we appreciate you being our guest today.
I appreciate you having me on. I appreciate the fact that you guys are out there standing up for these types of issues and the concerns of, I think, most Americans. So thank you for having me on.
All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Happy day.
You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues. If I lived in Texas, I would be proud to call Ken Paxton my attorney general.
Absolutely. He's concerned about the safety of women and children. I think most individuals are, and I think the only ones who aren't are those who have a political or other type agenda that they're pushing instead of what common sense tells you.
I just a closing remark on this right here. I would think this, if I'm Target's, I'm not an attorney nor have I ever played one on TV, but if I'm Target's corporate attorney looking out for the, you know, for their company, I would be somewhat concerned that my corporation that I represent has announced to the world, men, come on into women's restrooms
right.
and changing areas. We're not going to stop you.
Right.
And what I'm saying is, from a attorney perspective, if you're trying to protect your company, you have to say, that's not wise, because what if something happens in one of our stores and somebody is injured or damaged, or these pictures that are being taken in Target stores that we've mentioned that are being
right.
reported around the country? Women in changing rooms, pictures being taken of them, and somebody does sue them, Target I'm talking about, and they say you did nothing to protect your customers
right.
from this happening. In other words, if the corporation had a defense, hey, we don't advocate men coming into women's restrooms and changing areas, we don't do that, then they would have
right.
they would have more of a defense, it seems to me. I don't know. You get the right court, and they say, you know, the person who's injured does have a reasonable right to expect
right.
the corporation to protect them from this kind of situation. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Our guest now is Michael Savage, a nationally syndicated radio talk show host and has been for a number of years. His book is called Scorched Earth, Restoring the Country After Obama. That's the title of it, and he joins us now. Michael, good morning to you.
I'm sorry, for some reason I can't hear you very well.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Very vaguely. I'm sorry to tell you.
Okay, let's try in and out. Let's try this. Let's try to hook up one more time on the phone, and if it doesn't improve, we'll reschedule you. How about that?
Well, we were set to do it on ISDN, and apparently there was an incompatibility in the two systems, but I don't understand.
Well, if you can hear me, if you can hear me say
the call, and I thank you.
Yes, sir. If you can hear me say that, then I think we're okay. We'll try this and see if it works. Tell us what your book, Scorched Earth, is basically about. Can you hear me?
Okay, I guess
we're going to have to just reschedule. We'll do something. I don't know what happened there, but he couldn't hear me. That's weird. He heard me say, can you hear me?
Yeah.
He said yes, and then I asked the question, and he could no longer hear me, so I don't know what happened there.
We'll figure it out and try to reschedule.
Figure it out. I'm technically inept.
I'm right behind you.
I can gas up my car.
Yeah.
Turn on the light, turn it off, turn it on and off.
Yeah. That's why we have engineers.
Get milk out of the fridge.
We hire guys that can get that stuff done.
But,
hey, I wanted to make mention, if I could just go back to the Target thing. This is why stores have, if you ever go to a Walmart or, a JCPenney, you go to the mall, whatever, all those big light poles they have with plenty of lighting. You know why they do that, Tim? It's not really because they care. I don't want to say it. I don't want to be ugly. I think retail companies want their customers to be able to see as they're getting in their car. I think it's because there's a safety issue. And if you have a poorly lit parking lot and someone gets mugged, the store gets sued. So I think that's what they do. You have clearly delineated parking spaces rather than just y'all come and find a spot where you want. They're going to get fender benders. The store is going to get sued. So companies do feel a legal responsibility to have a reasonably safe environment for shoppers to come. For one thing, it keeps shoppers coming back. For another, it keeps the stores from getting sued. And I think you're exactly right. At some point, Target and maybe even other retailers, if they want to mimic Target, they are going to find themselves getting sued by people who say, listen, it's a no-brainer. You let men into the women's restroom. Something bad happened to my wife or my children, and you're responsible. And the thing is, as you suggested, Tim, there's a very simple solution here. Transgender people or anybody who wants to use the bathroom alone can go to the single occupancy bathroom. But this isn't really about people going to the bathroom.
No.
This is about an agenda. Target is bought into it. And I think at some point, it could not only cost them at the cash register, it could cost them in a lawsuit.
Abe Hamilton will be with us in a few minutes, public policy analyst for American Family Association. I want him to come over and talk about this and the North Carolina situation. Folks, you might ask yourself, you know this is important, but you might say, why are we spending so much time talking about this? Let me just, we talked about this yesterday, Ed. If we can back this up to a more fundamental look at what's going on here, North Carolina, for example, just being pummeled by the media, the entertainment industry, everybody's piling on North Carolina, for their reasonable bathroom policy that they instituted.
And I want to with regards to men's room and women's room, talking about.
Yeah. But you mentioned something in our meeting yesterday. Why is it, what's really, if you peel back the layers here of this onion, if you will, what's really at play here? What's really going on?
Yeah, I think this is my opinion. And there's a number of factors. I don't discount other things. Here's one that I think is at play. And that is that the secular progressive movement in this country uses the sexual revolution to continue the process of dismantling the Judeo-Christian foundations in this country. That's why this is linked to our previous guest, Jeremy Dice, from the First Liberty Institute. Why in the world would a school call the cops on a 7-year-old kid who's handing out Bible verses? And I think it is because secular progressives, humanists, do not want the Judeo-Christian foundation of our nation to remain standing. So they do whatever they can to dismantle it. And issues related to sex and marriage and family become the hammer, the sledgehammer by which they continue the attempt to shatter those Christian foundations. Because nothing is more revealing of in terms of the difference between a humanist view of life and a Christian view of life than our view of what sex, marriage, and family is all about. That is a clear-cut difference between those two worldviews, and they're using it to peel back the foundations of our country. That's at least one of the factors I think that is at play.
But why the vitriol toward North Carolina? Why? And do you notice that?
How dare they pass a law that says men have to go to men's room and women have to go to women's room?
But they only did this. When Abe gets here, maybe we can talk about this a little bit more. But they only did this because of what Charlotte did.
Right, the city of Charlotte. City of Charlotte passed a law that said, hey, whoever wants to use whatever bathroom they want to use, and that's going to be our law and policy.
In the city of Charlotte.
In the city of Charlotte. Well, unfortunately for the city of Charlotte, state law says individual cities and towns don't have the legal right to make those judgments. That is a state issue, so that all of North Carolina is uniform. So the state legislature passed a law, signed by the governor, passed a law that said, Charlotte, you can't do that. Bathrooms, the policy of this state is that in government buildings, now Target can do whatever it wants, but in government buildings, men have to use the men's facilities, women have to use the women's facilities. That's the law in this state. You would have thought they had passed the most unreasonable law that you could conceive of. And that's the kind of punishment North Carolina is getting because they want to, in the words of Barney Fife, secular progressives want to nip this in the bud. We're going to make North Carolina into a state filled with villains so that the other states will think twice before doing this.
You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We need to pray that the governor and the state legislature in North Carolina doesn't cave on this issue.
Because, right. They're under tremendous pressure.
Yeah. Yeah, the NCAA announced last week they were pulling their tournaments from the state of North Carolina.
Right.
The ACC, the conference that Duke and North Carolina State and Wake Forest, those are four institutions located in the Tar Heel State that are in membership with the ACC, announced that they weren't going play any of their tournaments in North Carolina. I mean, this is crazy. You're talking about the punishment fitting the crime, even if there's a crime here.
Right.
I don't think there's a crime here, but I'm just saying, even if you did to bring this kind of pressure to bear.
Well, the NBA All-Star Game.
Yeah,
too,
they moved.
It's being removed. PayPal refused to set up a call center in North Carolina, even though they're doing business in their
international headquarters, not headquarters, but one of their big places is in Malaysia, I think.
Malaysia.
Which homosexuality is
a crime.
Where
they beat homosexuals imprison them.
So PayPal sets up an operation in Malaysia where they beat homosexuals and imprison them while they refuse to come to North Carolina because they're indignant that North Carolina wants to separate men and women
in their bathrooms.
In the restrooms.
Yeah.
Abe Hamilton in with us. Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst and co-host on Wednesdays with us here on Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Abe, we were talking about what's going on in North Carolina. It was related to the Target issue.
Yeah.
I asked Ed this question. I'll ask you this. You didn't hear his answer, so you can't.
I wasn't able to suck from the fountain of wisdom.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say that, but I didn't say that.
Because nobody here believes it. That's why.
What's going on, really, here with this attack on North Carolina over something so reasonable as separation of sexes in bathrooms?
I think you're seeing one of the first battles, if you will, of what I affectionately refer to as the Tushnet strategy. You can't forget Mark Tushnet, the professor, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name properly, the Harvard professor, who says, listen, folks, we fought all of the culture wars, and the I'll just use my words, the Christians lost. So now we need to treat, and he didn't say Christians, he said conservatives.
Right.
We need to treat the conservatives like the Nazis were treated after World War II. We need to literally push all conservative ideology from the public square. We need to make it as embarrassing and as shameful for a conservative to maintain a conservative viewpoint on issues as the Nazis should feel for carrying anything with a swastika on it.
Right.
And that's what we're seeing here. And, you know, there's kind of the progressive vultures are circling around North Carolina because they think they can shame and boycott it and embarrass it into submission in an effort really to cause all other conservatives around the country to shudder and quake in fear of what will happen if anybody dare publicly voice a conservative position.
Have you ever seen a more powerful lobby, if that's the way you want to put it, than the LGBTQ lobby in terms of the number of people they represent? And by that, I mean there are roughly, by guess, best studies I've seen says that about 2% people are gay or lesbian or bisexual in this country. And then 0.3 would identify as transgendered.
Yeah.
So you've got a tiny percentage of Americans, and yet they wield power unlike any other group I can think of in this country over the media, over the academia, over business, to the point where you can make NCAA, which made up of presidents of universities. I know they're traditionally liberal. I know that. But, I mean, can make them take away their tournaments because to North Carolina over this. Have you ever seen a group so small have so much power?
No, I haven't seen that, but it
so small in numbers.
They're so small in numbers, but the culture has been, you know, pardon the expression, but tenderized prior to this issue taking center stage. They've been tenderized to rally around it. So what I mean by that is, you know, ideas and thoughts have consequences. You can't, you know, inject the culture and saturate it with moral relativism and postmodernism and all of this anti-Christ ideology and then expect down the line for people to be able to stand up and say, oh, but wait a minute, that's wrong. No. What's happened is that the culture has been saturated with basically with this anti-Christ ideology, but more specifically with, you know, moral relativism and this kind of progressive thought process. And the tip of the spear has become sexual ethics, you know. And so, you know, almost like the homosexual marriage thing, that's done. That's not even an issue anymore. But because that has been so widely embraced, you have a large swath. And I would say the majority of the American culture is receptive to this Antichrist ideology, which is why you see, you know, half of the Democratic Party base literally voting for a socialist.
Or right. if they're not receptive to it, they're not going to speak out against it.
No. Right?
Because they don't, they see what happens to people.
That's right.
Who say
right.
something against, in any way, shape, or form against the LGBT movement and whatever they want.
It's become synonymous with you. If you speak out, you are the one saying Heil Hitler and branding your arm with a swastika.
Right. And that's scary.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, for our culture. You can't even offer anything like Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama did against same-sex marriage.
Yeah. Not too long ago.
If they were to do that today, they would be bigots and homophobes.
That's right.
We'll be back after the news. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.